You lucky little devils, guess who's back? Jiminy Crickets, just when you thought the radio was safe again, here we are. And today we got saltwater stuff, deep water stuff, we got inshore, offshore, we got freshwater stuff to talk about. We got lots of stuff to talk about, and I guess the best way to get that talked about is for me to shut up and start talking about it. But Fishing Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, and in command and control, RJ. We've down here in Southwest Florida, wherever you're listening, and thank you if you're up in Jersey, Maine, Minnesota, Canada, Ohio, wherever, Georgia, wherever you happen to be, your numbers of listeners are all over the place. And, you know, it is community radio. This is not a, you don't hear ads and stuff. So if you like the programming, go to the donate button. When you click the listen now, then go to the donate button and donate $5, $10, donate, you know, $10,000, $20,000. That would be nice. You know, wouldn't it, RJ?
I wouldn't turn that down.
Wouldn't turn it down. No, you know, but if you can, you know, $5, whatever you got, you know, if you like the programming, donate a little bit to WKDW and keep everything going. Because, you know, you got to rent the building and do all that stuff. It's a lot of money.
My coffee bill alone is pretty significant.
Yeah, I'd rather pay your coffee bill than your whiskey bill.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's true. RJ might be a touch Irish. And, you know, whiskey was invented so the Irish wouldn't rule the world. Right. Other than that.
Well, I was recently invited to a Christmas party, and my question was, will there be whiskey?
You can have a Christmas party without whiskey?
Yeah, of course not.
I was going to say,
but
I didn't.
But you know, there's a lot of non-Irish people out there that don't get that, you know.
I don't know. I'm Dutch, and I get it.
Yeah?
Yeah, so. But anyway, let's see. Full moon. And full moons can bring on a feed, slow down a feed. Historically, if you have a full moon and it's bright out. Now, Tuesday night, went to Christmas party and PGI Fishing Club and been to the Englewood Fishing Club party. And if you live in the Englewood Rotunda area or you're visiting down there, check out the Englewood Fishing Club. You don't have to join to go to a meeting and listen in. You don't have to, you know, literally there's people there that live in Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda, Englewood, Rotunda, South Gulf Cove. They all end up at that meeting. They have 100 and some members. A lot of fun club, Englewood Fishing Club, second Thursday of the month. But, you know, all the different Christmas parties. When I got home the other night, it was bright. I mean, the moon was real bright. I could see my different keys, you know, when I'm going to do the door lock. And the reason that's significant in the world of fishing is fish can see their prey at night when you got a real bright full moon. And it makes the predator a little more, the bait can't see him as much. So the feeding goes on all night long.
Yeah, their success rate goes up significantly with their hunting.
Yeah, so, because if they're eating crabs or shrimp or bait fish, they can sneak up on them better.
Yeah, definitely.
So once you have a full moon, I'm going to say it's probably 11, 12, 1 o'clock in the afternoon before those fish are going to feed again the next day.
Yeah, it's definitely usually more in the late mornings all through the early afternoon before it turns on, and every day is a little different. I've seen it where it didn't turn on until 3 o'clock in the afternoon, but when it does, it's pretty amazing.
And I think the brighter the moon is, the later in the day that bite's going to happen. And the other night, Tuesday, it was so bright. Last night, it was very bright. Mm-hmm. So you're really looking sometime after 12 o'clock before you're going to get those fish to bite, even in deep water.
Yeah.
Because that light penetrates down and those fish go to feeding. And when you have a new moon, in other words, it's very dark outside, the fish don't feed at night.
Right.
It's, they will eat, they will feed, but it's not like they can actually see as well as hear and smell their prey.
Right.
So it's a lot more difficult for them to feed at night. They kind of wait till the day. So the bite starts much earlier when it's dark all night. But when it's been lit up all night the way it has been, it looks like a searchlight in the sky, for goodness sakes.
You can almost read a book.
Yeah, you can almost read by the light of the moon the other
night. Yeah, and tonight is going to be the brightest. The full moon is, it's interesting, it's the full moon is full at 12 a.m., and the date is 12-12.
Really?
And it's called the cold moon. This is the last moon of the last full moon.
Okay.
Of the decade.
Right. We were.
But it's going to be ultra bright. It's one of the brightest moons. Even though it's not the closest moon, it's one of the brightest moons of the year.
So basically this weekend, along with the cooler temperatures and stuff, I would probably plan your trip a little bit later in the day. Now, depending upon where you are in the country when you're listening, but if you go outside and you can actually see things, you know, it's more twilight than it is dark, don't get up early and go fishing.
No, I agree with that.
Whether it's you're in a lake in Illinois or a river in Minnesota, wait. Give them some time to get hungry again. If you're sitting there and you just finished a big lunch and your buddy comes up and says, you know, hey, let's go get something to eat. Is that something you're really interested in? You sit there with the big belly syndrome going on trying to settle the food, and he's like, oh, come on, let's go eat. It's no different for the fish. If you've had a big feed, you're going to get hungry again, but it's not going to be right away.
Right. You've
got to give it a little bit of time.
Now, one of my favorite fishing experiences, though, is to walk the beach with a spinning rod on a full moon night, and you're going to see stuff you've probably not ever seen in the daytime, and fish in the top water at this point, you know, with a bright moon out, and if the tide is right for you, it's going to be a hell of an experience. Like I said, and this is when the bite is going on. It's going on during that bright moon.
And that kind of brings us to something else that's going on right now. This full moon is bunching the mullet up. We're getting dozens and dozens of reports in the canals of schools of hundreds of mullet or thousands of mullet all bunching up, getting ready to head out to deep water to spawn. Now, no one knows for sure, but the generally accepted theory on mullet spawning is they go out to the deep water in the Gulf, and the males and females swim down into depth. And the water pressure squeezes the eggs and the sperm out of the fish. And as it floats to the top, it mingles together. And that's how they're fertilized. And then, theoretically, the eggs come in on an incoming tide. They go out, and right before the high tide, they all dive down deep and let that incoming tide take the eggs into shore. But it's the water pressure they go deep for to get the eggs squeezed out of them. That's why they don't spawn in the harbor or in the canals. They get together to go out and spawn, but they don't actually spawn inside. They spawn out in the Gulf.
Right. And a lot of people aren't, you know, that are from up north that are familiar with freshwater fishing. Most of our saltwater fish don't build nests. You know, so they think when fish are going out to spawn, they're going to think about fish being on a bed and guarding it and all that stuff. Most of your saltwater fish actually rely on the full moon because of the strong tides and currents to help distribute their eggs pretty much worldwide, and even in some situations like in Charlotte Harbor, that strong incoming tide of that full moon pulls in that those fertilized eggs and distributes them into the mangrove systems where they can survive and grow.
And you might think of the fertilized eggs under another word, plankton.
Right.
Because the fish eggs are part of the whole plankton thing. You know, all the living mechanisms that drift around in the oceans and the Gulf and all that. But the big thing about the mullet spawn right now, and RJ throwing the topwaters, the topwater bite is phenomenal. At night, during the day, you're going to get some really nice topwater stuff going on. What the full moon and this mullet run has affected is the size of the lure. how big a lure you're going to throw. Usually it's 2-3 inches, maybe a 4-inch.
Right.
But right now, you want to be throwing at least a 6-inch topwater.
Definitely. For, you know, you're basically, you know, we always talk about matching the hatch. And with all these schools of mullet out there, the mullet are anywhere from 10 inches all the way up to 20 inches, really.
And 6, 8, 10 inches, they're all different sizes, but very few 2-3-inch mullet at this time of year.
Right.
So they've all gotten at least 6-8 inches long.
Yeah, so throwing those big, what you would associate popper-wise with something you would normally throw for, say, amberjack, or what you see on TV guys throwing for giant trevally or something like that. Those are the type of poppers that some of the
people
are throwing.
The big ones you want to think about where you'd use out in the deep water Atlantic or the deep water Gulf around the oil rigs.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing that you would classify as an inside lure.
Yeah. Well, the striper guys would actually associate it with it. So anyone from like the Northeast would know
the
striper.
The big striper top waters. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, those are appropriate right now.
And even the crankbaits, the regular casting lures, you're using the Rapala 12s. I mean, there's big baits, big lures. And what's funny is you can get snook in that 26, 27-inch range to hit a 6-8-inch lure easily.
Oh, yeah.
Easily. And so you're not just limited to the 40-inch stuff. I mean, if a fish is 3 times the size of another fish, he's going to try and eat it. Yeah. Even if he's twice the size of another fish, he's going to try and eat it. A lot of fish die because they go after food that's almost their size. They get it half swallowed down their throat. I've seen literally dozens of pictures where you have a 38-inch snook that tried to eat a 34-inch snook.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a redfish or whatever it might happen to be.
A lot of people are used to seeing it with pike because it's real common with pike where a 26-inch pike will eat a 24-inch pike and choke out on it. That's a very common one, but they all are capable and at some point have done it. So don't be too scared.
What's your favorite size topwater? You usually throw in the smaller stuff, or you get into the big stuff this year?
I think at this time of year, I agree with you guys. Throw the bigger stuff because you're going to get the bigger fish. I mean, you're out there for the experience. I mean, something hits a topwater lure at night. You know, the beach is completely quiet. There's nobody hanging out on the beach, and you still have some of that phosphorus that you can see. And then something explodes on your topwater lure, and it's usually going to be a pretty good-sized fish that does it. I mean, why would you go out there and catch a little
and there's,
stuff?
Nice thing is there's nobody to see the pee stains in your pants.
That's right.
You
exactly
know?
Right.
It's dark. You know, it's just dark enough to hide the pee stains in your pants.
That's right.
Well, and the cool part about that is, like, you know, it's like when you're fishing in a boat on the flats, you know that fishing in this area usually is more for snook, or this area is more for redfish. In some instances. But when you go out there, you're fishing a topwater, you're fishing actually on the open flats, someplace where your mind normally isn't set for expecting a 30-inch snook to come up. Or
right along the Gulf beaches.
30-inch
you never
redfish.
Know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a tarpon, it could be a shark, I mean, big snook. I mean, even cobia come in right up near to the beaches because they're all looking for sleeping fish.
They're in there in that 6-8 inches of water, and these fish are 40-some inches long or bigger.
Yeah, well, quite a few years back on Minnesota Beach, I caught a barracuda one night on a topwater. Surprised, I didn't even know what it was because it was so damn long. Yeah. You know, until I got it in close enough to see it. It's like, what's a barracuda doing in 7 inches of water here?
Yeah.
But they come in because the baits come in. You know, the bait's moving closer to shore and closer to structure because they know the bad guys can see them. And so the bad guys come in, the predators come in, and they're looking to eat.
Oh, yeah, and it's not uncommon. Even in the case of a dolphin like Flipper, watch them go up and literally be on their belly in the sand, almost out of water, and have to flip-flop back out of it to chase a fish right up onto the beach.
Right.
And we see it in a lot of species. And I think the key thing, if you're listening, was what were we saying the water depth, 8 foot, 10 foot, or 8 or 10 inches? It's at 8 or 10 inches. They're so close to the beach. Now, you got to figure, even a 6-foot barracuda's maybe 10 inches tall. Yeah, right?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And if you're a 40-inch snook, you're 7-8 inches tall tops.
Yeah.
So 10 inches of water is nothing for you.
No.
You can swim easily in that. They can swim, if they're 8 inches tall, they can probably swim in, you know, 8 inches of water, you know, with their back out of the water.
Yeah.
So when you're thinking about these big fish and you're out there, especially you're going to come down to Florida, you're going to walk along the beach, you're going to go out there, it's a beautiful night, and you're casting way out as far as you can away from all the fish. Yes, away from the fish. You want to cast parallel down the shoreline. I mean, almost to the point your lure's getting dragging in the sand with a topwater. And then fan cast your way out towards the deep. But, you know, go by the numbers on the clock. You start out, you're casting at 3 o'clock, and then 2 o'clock, and then 1 o'clock, and then 12 o'clock, then 11, then 10, then 9, then, you know. You want to work your way out and along the beaches. I don't cast just along the beach, but 90% of the people I see walking the beach casting are not casting to catch fish. They're casting to see how far they can cast, because there's no other reason for only throwing out towards the open water, and it just makes you feel good. But you ever heard that thing where if you're in a boat fishing for bass, they're 40 feet off the shore casting at the shoreline or up under the dock, and if the guy's on the shore or on the pier, he's casting out where the boat is.
Right, right.
You know,
another point about night fishing on the full moon, during the day, you got all this activity on the beach. You got a lot of boats going by. You got people splashing in the water. You got people, like Frank says, casting out into deep water. And all that noise pushes the bigger fish out and away, and it pushes the bait fish out and away from the beach because of all the disturbance. At night, it's quiet. There's nothing going on. The odds of you seeing a boat are slim to none, and the bigger fish now can come in because they're not being disturbed by sounds. And so that the other thing it does is it makes your topwater lure even more attractive because it's the only noise going on the surface.
Now, what's nice about it, especially if you're a wintertime visitor, you know, the weather's miserable, it's rainy, it's freezing cold, it's freezing rain, just want to get away for a while. In Florida, the predominant wind direction is from the east-northeast all through, from, you know, all the cooler months, November, December, January, February. That's what makes the months cooler. We get the wind from up north. What's nice about that is it makes that water right next to the beach very calm, very still. Now, if you have a light wind blowing out of the west, you're going to have a pretty good ripple. You're probably not going to be able to use the top water to a lot of effect, because if the waves have any kind of white capping to them, that's a lot of noise. And the fish are not going to be able to hear your top water over the splashing of the waves. So if you're down for season, and this time of year, this is our season, it's absolutely opposite the rest of the planet. Once you get north of Interstate 4, Tampa, Orlando, season is, you know, Labor Day to Memorial Day, summertime. Soon as you're north of I-4, but when you're south of I-4, season runs November to the 4th of July.
That's true.
So we have these easterly winds, which the shore is protecting the water right there, so the wind isn't grabbing it. It's not making any waves. It's mill pond still. So you've got these nights where the water's literally flat, calm, mill pond type stuff. Perfect for what RJ's talking about.
Absolutely. It makes it so enjoyable. And, you know, you mention it with the phosphorescent algae that's in the water. There's certain areas where you go into and it's nothing but glow in the dark. And you can actually sometimes, in some instances, if you're really lucky, sight cast a fish in pitch black, because you'll actually see that fish moving around along the beach. Or if you're out on a boat on the flats, you'll actually be able to see a fish gliding along because of the trailers it's leaving behind it, and take a cast to it. And then if it blows up on it, then you actually get to find out what that fish really is.
Well, what Robert's trying to talk about is, picture you're watching a Star Wars movie and you see these green lights zipping along all over the place, and it's just green in the water, like a glow stick light. Mm-hmm. And picture if you dumped the glow stick along a fish, and it was rinsing off as he swam down the shoreline. And this trails of green light are coming all over the place. That's what happens when you get this phosphorescent algae and stuff. It's not phosphate. It's not from a phosphate mine. It's a completely different thing. When the waters glow in the dark, they call it, what, St. Elmo's fire?
Yes,
or,
yes.
You know, but you literally, it's an amazing phenomenon. And it looks like a glow stick. And, I mean, I've seen it where I was running the boat, and as the wake was going up, you could actually read inside the boat on a dark night because it was glowing so much. It looks
That's
like
awesome.
A spaceship going
That's
across.
Absolutely
and
awesome.
And when the fish start darting out, it looks like they got a Star Wars space movie going on. Everybody's shooting stuff at each other. It's really cool.
And the long and short of it, boys and girls, if you have not been night fishing around the brighter parts of the moon, you are missing something and you need to go. It's an experience you have to call yourself a fisherman.
Yeah, you got to do it at least once.
At least once. And if you did it once, you're going to do it a lot because it really does have a siren call that makes you want to go back and do it again.
Yeah, and you can take a buddy with you, you know, if you don't want to walk the beach by yourself, if, you know, you're nervous about something. But our beaches are pretty safe down here. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not Miami, we're not Tampa. You pretty much go to the beach, you're going to be fine. Key West, 81 degrees water temperature. St. Pete, 69 degree water temperature.
Wow.
So you get a 10, 11 degree difference between St. Pete and Key West, or Naples, St. Pete and Naples. It's the water temperature, the only place it's about normal is in Pensacola. It's 1 degree off. It's 1 degree warmer. It's 59 degrees, should be 58 degrees. In St. Pete, it's supposed to be 64. It's 69 degrees.
Wow.
Supposed to be 72 in Key West. It's 81.
Jeez.
Naples, 72. It's supposed to be 68. So Naples is pretty much on track. It's not that far off, you know. But
yeah, but you say not that far off. I mean, that's 4 degrees, and you taught me that years ago with, you know, what's the difference of 2 degrees?
Hard water or soft water.
Yeah, one you're drilling through it to fish out of or keeping your drink nice and chilly or
yeah,
not.
The difference, 2 degrees, is that if it's the water temp is 33 degrees or 32 degrees.
Yeah.
I'd say that's a drastic difference. And yeah. You're right. I'm sorry.
No,
I was wrong, boys and girls. I forgot my own
woo-hoo!
Rules.
We get to mark that one on the calendar. He admitted it.
Yeah.
In public, he admitted
that's
it.
That's right. I'm getting a plaque made.
I said it out loud.
Get on the phone right now.
Don't get used to it.
No, that's why we want to mark it on the calendar.
Let's see. But the cool thing is, it's another one of those things that people don't think about when they come down to Florida, and the people who live here don't really recognize how amazing it is.
Oh, yeah.
And a great idea, and really the way you want to do this, is take a cruise during the day. Find where you're going to park, how you're going to walk out there, where you're going to walk along, where you're going to come back to. A little Lewis and Clark. Go out, do a little exploration during the day. Take your rod, make a few casts. But you got Middle Beach, Nokomis, you've got Stump Pass, there's up by Venice. There's all kinds of beaches you can do. This all the way down to Sanibel and beyond. I mean, all these beaches work for what we're talking about doing. It doesn't have to be anyone in particular. But what you want to do is drive around and find one where you've got a nice place to park, kind of close to where you're going, and a fairly clear walkway. Because, you know, you don't want to trip and fall at night. I'm old. I don't heal well anymore. You know, when I was in my 20s or 30s or 40s or whatever, you know, if I tripped and fell, I'm going to heal up quick anyway. So now I like to check my footing out. And that's why I go out during the day, find a nice place that you want to walk along and fish, kind of map it out in your head and say, okay, I'm going to walk up this far and then I'm coming back. And it's a nice way to go. But a little daytime exploration will make an amazing nighttime trip. And this is if you're a Florida resident, a winter snowbird, or just a day tripper come down for an afternoon. Say you're listening to us up in Orlando or Wachula. You know, you're just going to come down for a day and fish. Remember, you can night fish, and the beaches are open if you're actively fishing. No, you cannot hang out on them all night. If you're just hanging out, a lot of places have ordinance against hanging out all night on the beach. But while you're actively fishing, no, you're allowed to do that. Weird law in Florida, but one of the few good ones we have.
One of the few smarter ones, yeah.
If you're actively engaged in fishing. Now, that doesn't mean you can walk around with your tongue hanging out, drooling on yourself, holding a fishing pole. You know? All right. Big Jacks. Hearing wonderful stories of amazing stuff about these Big Jack Revel. Probably the number one pull, number one fighting fish in the world are Jacks. Pound for pound, one of the best fights there is.
Absolutely. Guys have been catching them in the upper Myakka River. I mean, they're catching them in the lower part, but I'm hearing some better reports from above El Jobin all the way up to the 41 Bridge. There's been a couple schools cruising through there, and I think part of that is these mullet are getting them excited, and that's why they've kind of moved out into the river a little bit more. And then the other place where I've been getting reports of really big jacks is the PGI canals in Alligator Creek. But out in the middle of the harbor, there has been schools of smaller jacks. But those ones in the river and PGI are running like 10 to 15 pounds.
Yeah, the Myakka River, Peace River, PGI canals, you've got some monster fish.
Yeah.
And if you've got two lines out and you hook them both up, the number one
chaos.
Thing to do is just, you know, sit there and wait for one to break off and then go chase the other one. Because you're not going to land, if you've got two of those big jack hooked up, I'd say your odds of landing both fish are somewhere between slim and none. You know?
I agree.
Because they're peeling out, you know, yard after yard of line. 100 yards is gone. 120 yards is gone. And the fish, the other fish going the other way. So you got one fish going east at 110 yards away from the boat. You got one fish going west at 130 yards away from the boat. Who loses their fish first? And then when that one gets lost, well, then you can start the boat up and go follow the other one and get some line back and maybe land that fish. But the odds of landing more than one jack, if you got triples, doubles hooked up, not good at all.
Yeah, God bless you.
Yeah. Just hang on, enjoy the zzz, 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 zzz sound you're going to hear. All right.
Yeah. It's been pretty amazing. I mean, people don't realize how
big
incredible.
Top waters?
Yeah. Yeah, big top waters.
Storm switch sticks, big top waters, Rapala, XR10s. You can use some of the soft plastics, but at night they're not as effective. I don't feel that the, you know, big flukes and stuff are as effective at night as they could be.
No.
I want something with a lip on it that's going to swim the bait a little bit more, get it a little more noise. That's where topwater comes in. That Berkeley prop bait is great for it because it's got a lot of blah, 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 big splash and buzz bait type stuff going on.
Right. And I'm going to throw that all day long, too. You know, I'm going to see because, I mean, last year those guys in PGI and in the Myakka River were catching so many big jacks and snook middle-of-the-day fishing. Whether it was overcast or not, it was pretty surprising. And I think it's just because they get so excited and so focused on these schools of mullet that they're just waiting for something to come by that looks like an easy enough prey item.
Now, if I'm going to troll a topwater, it's probably going to be that Berkeley prop because it's going to be big enough, it's elongated, and that big thrasher blade on the back of it's going to give me enough noise. But if I'm used to trolling a subsurface lure 40 feet behind the boat, I'm going to pull that topwater at 60 feet behind the boat. I always give it about another third of the distance if I'm trolling underwater compared to trolling on the surface because I don't want the prop wash from the boat getting the fish confused with my topwater bait.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
You know, if you're idling along, you don't have that much prop wash, but the noise of the boat going through the water, the little bubbling it makes, the noise of the outboard, the exhaust, all this stuff is pretty intense right around the boat. So I'm pushing a bit further back. When I have a subsurface lure and I'm trolling, I got that lip taking it back and forth. It's making a little noise. And I always start those just outside of my prop wash because the prop will actually help bring attention to my lures. You know, it's just like if you hear a loud truck or a motorcycle go by, you tend to look. And if you're in the water and all of a sudden there's the props going through the water, you're going to look up, if nothing else, just to make sure you're not going to get hit.
Well, and our fish have kind of gotten accustomed to it a little bit with, as a boat goes by, it disorients bait fish and everything else. So there's a lot of times where they're looking at it from the food perspective of, okay, did anything get turned up over there? Yep, I see a pinfish that got a little disoriented. I'm going to go wreck them. Or it spooked a shrimp off the bottom.
You can idle through a spool of bait and just literally chop up a couple and disorient dozens of them, mm-hmm. which can bring on a feed.
Absolutely. I mean, you've always told me to cast into the prop wash of a boat as it goes by you on the flats and not to be too terribly upset that they just cut between you and the shoreline, because a lot of times that creates a little bit of a feed in a chaotic moment.
Oh, yeah. I was embarrassed the heck out of myself. I was fishing in a area where the boats have to go through. They don't have any choice. They got to go through there. Here I am giving the guy the, you know, third finger salute, and, you know, he's like, where did you want me to go? And, you know, he went through, and so I quit, you know, getting mad at people for, okay, getting between me and my fish. And as they blew by, I'd reel the lines in when I saw them coming, and then just cast back. And it was an accidental find, just because I was acting like a jerk, I was being stupid, and embarrassed the heck out of myself. And then, you know, waving the boat through, you know, come on, you know, this is where you go, this is what you got to do. And then just wanting to get back in action and casting badly, where I ended up in their prop wash instead of all the way up by the beach where I wanted to go, hook up a fish. And then I started saying, well, that bad cast really worked out well. And so now I would start there, and when I had customers on the boat, I'd be begging people, I'd waving them, come on, go through, no, don't slow down, just keep going, run right through, get between me and the shore, blow right through there. And I'd tell everybody, cast right behind their boat. And if we had four people on a boat, it was not uncommon to have one, two, three, or even four fish hooked up right after that boat passed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and all that came out, and I learned all that because I was a jerk. If I wouldn't have been so obnoxious, self-centered, that, oh, my fishing and all this, and the guy embarrassed the heck out of me, saying, where did you expect me to go? It's the only channel here.
Yeah, you're fishing in a freeway, right?
Right, I'm fishing on a freeway and expecting him to what? To go 2 miles around me? No. And so I learned that the hard way, but hey, at least I learned it. All right, sheephead. Here's a question for you. Do the sheephead go up and down the shoreline at night when in this spawn mode they're in now? Under normal circumstances, before the spawn or after the spawn, yeah, they're going to cruise the beaches. But while they're in spawn, would they do that?
Under the full moon, I could see them being a little bit more active, but they're actually more of a diurnal or day-dwelling fish. They tend to sleep at night. They're not nearly as active. And, you know,
I was just wondering what the urinal had to do with it, but
yeah, diurnal.
And there were two of them.
Yeah, there was two of them. Yeah,
nowadays,
okay.
There's three.
All right. I digress here. Bait thieves. It's really funny that two fish, and we always think of sheephead as bait thieves.
Mm-hmm.
But think about it. When the guys go crappie fishing, they bunch up now, and the crappie fishing, Okeechobee's actually got a daytime bite going on.
Yeah.
For the last month, if you wanted crappie, you had to go to Okeechobee after dark. You weren't getting any crappie during the day. You had to be there at night. And you could do well at night, but there was literally, you go there fishing during the day, you get one. And now the guys are actually getting their limit during the day. Istapoga, Lake Trafford. We're hearing good things from everywhere right now.
Yeah. I got one thing that's kind of funny to me. It makes me think about that night fishing for crappie. You know, we make fun of these guys with their fish shacks up north in the ice and how elaborate they are. But these guys that fish for crappie over there in Okeechobee at night.
Porcupine boats?
Yeah. I mean, they've got a generator on the boat with all these crazy now LED lights. It used to be like almost metal halides that they used to have on their boats. It looks like a floating UFO/porcupine
because
on
they
the
use
water.
Cane poles for crappie fishing out over there. And you might have a spinning rod, but these guys are going to put a rod holder literally about every 2-3 feet all the way around the boat, and they put a cane pole in with the line and a jig on it,
mm-hmm.
and or a line and a minnow on it. And literally every 2 feet, all 365 degrees around the boat, the front, the sides, the back, everywhere has got a cane pole stuck out of it, hence the term porcupine boats. I mean, they got all these things stuck out of everywhere, and then the guy maybe is sitting there casting with a spinning rod for him. But everything else is just cane poles all stuck out. He watches for the cane pole to bob, picks it up, lands a fish, and drops the cane pole back in the water. And in the meantime, there's lights underwater. There's lights around the railing. It's literally a UFO.
It does. It's very strange, so it's kind of funny when you think about it. So I'd rather fish during the daytime so I don't have to look at all that.
No, I don't. I enjoy looking at it. I think it's fun.
Yeah.
You know, that's all good for me. RJ, you fish for crappies.
I have not fished for crappie here in the south. That was something we did up north.
But up north, you fish for crappie, right?
Yes.
They are not readily thought of as a bait thief, are they?
No, that's true. And I've heard that up down here where they people say crappie steal bait.
Well, if you're going crappie fishing down here and you expect to catch 5-10 crappie,
mm-hmm.
how many minnows are you going to take with you? 50? 100? If a guy's going out fishing for crappie down here, what do you think, how many minnows per hour should that guy bring with him?
Well, I should ask somebody that owns a bait and tackle store. That person would know.
Yeah, well,
You would think.
I proposed this question to Robert on the way up. How many minnows per hour would you recommend? With shrimp, we always figure you probably only need a dozen, but we figure a dozen and a half, 2 dozen an hour for a person fishing. And in freshwater, these guys are going out figuring catching their limit of crappie, which is what, 25, 50?
25.
He's taking 10 dozen minnows with him to catch 25 crappie. 10 dozen. That's 120 to catch 25. So he's figuring on losing 3 out of 4 minnows.
Yes, you know, I always thought like bluegills were a great bait stealer because they do that little nibbly thing on the end of your bait, and they eventually eat it all up around the hook without ever making the bobber do anything more than jiggle. I never thought crappies would do that, but apparently they do.
Well, I think it's, you know, the thing that we have, depending on the lake or canal system that you're in, it's not just the crappie that do it. You end up catching bluegill as bycatch, bass. You know, a 4-pound bass will eat a little 1.5-inch crappie minnow.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a lot of our invasive species like our tilapia and Mayan cichlids.
Bluegills, so, shellcrackers, catfish. Yeah. I mean, you name it, just about everything wants to eat a minnow.
So you're going through as a bycatch, basically, to try to catch that crappie. So now you're fighting the crappie that wants to steal your bait.
And all the other guys. Yeah.
And people forget about that, except for when they come in and you go, what? He's only going down the street and he just bought 10 dozen minnows. What's he going camping for the weekend? And then you stop and think about it. And it's like, okay, I get it now because I've never really gave it much thought other than, wow, that's a lot.
Most crappie fishermen, unless they're only going out for a half an hour, take 6, 8, 10, 12 dozen minnows with them.
Yeah.
And I would never, you know, it's only been 35 years. I have to have time to build these questions up. But how many minnows per hour would we recommend for someone going crappie fishing? And that's it's a weird thought I've never had before. And I don't care what you say out there. I don't think you have either.
I'm going to go with double what we would usually suggest for shrimp. I'm going to go
three dozen.
I'm going to go 3 or 4.
4 dozen an hour?
3 or 4, yeah.
3 or 4. So basically, I'm doing 2, 3, you're doing 3, 4. So let's say 3 dozen an hour.
Yeah.
Would probably be about right. When you were up north, RJ, crappie fishing, because I fish crappie up north as well, but how many minnows were you thinking, did you normally get to go out, and what was your expectation?
Boy, I would say I usually would go with a mixed bag of bait. So you'd bring some night crawlers with you, you'd bring some minnows with you. I'm gonna guess, yeah, and I do have to say, because you catch a lot of other stuff that you weren't really going for, and of course that ruins the bait, you gotta start all over again. So yeah, about 2-3 dozen would be my guess.
Yeah, at least 2-3 dozen an hour.
Right.
And had you ever thought of that before?
No.
And what were your expectations when you bought 4 dozen minnows? What were you think was you were going to get by using that 4 dozen minnows?
So, like, you know, you're always looking at your limit, right? I can boat 20 individual fish, and that's all I can keep.
So
you're kind of going by, well, how many do I have in the well so far? And you're not really thinking about what you got in the way of bait until you stick your hand in the bait well and there's nothing in there. And you've only been fishing 2 hours. So you were thinking
about 4 dozen crappie minnows for like 20 crappie, maybe.
Yeah, maybe around that.
But still, you were actually thinking you wanted to double the bait for the amount of fish you wanted to catch.
Yeah, I think that's a good number. It's a good way to figure it, because you do get a lot of waste. And if you cast like a crazy man, the guy's doing
3-4 times that number.
Yeah.
They're planning on catching 25. They're literally doing 10, you know, 12 dozen minnows.
Yeah. I think that there's a little difference in the ecology between fishing for crappie up north, you know, say Pennsylvania going.
Outside of the fish north. Are bigger here.
Well, the fish are bigger, but also...
Florida, big fish.
That's right. But I don't think you have as much bycatch species as like you do down here, because like you said, we got the cichlids and the tilapia and a whole
10 years ago, we didn't have the bycatch we do now.
That's right, because we got so many invasive fish that I think those numbers of things that will potentially eat your minnow goes way up, versus when you're in a pond in New York, you're thinking, well, maybe a perch will grab something, maybe a bluegill will grab something, but not all this other stuff that you're just going to throw back, you're not going to keep.
No, that makes perfect sense. I agree with that.
And again, we've talked about this on numerous shows. Fishing up north is different than fishing down here. It may not be better or worse, but it's just different. And you have to adapt to the different conditions and what you have to do and what you have to work. Yes, a lot of lures that you use up north will be working down here, but you're going to have to work them differently.
Yeah. You know, and the other thing is, for a lot of guys that will take those smaller quantities of minnows, let's say he only takes 4 dozen minnows, a lot of times he's got beetle spins and small marabou jigs, some other type of little artificial lure of some kind that he's going to try to utilize in addition to that. So I don't know if it's backup or if he uses the minnows to find the small schools of crappie and then uses the artificial to start catching them at that point.
Well, that's an interesting way of going about it, is use your live bait to locate the schools.
Yeah.
And then now you can work that school and entice them into taking an artificial.
And it's no different than we tell the people with fly rods. Use something that you can actually fish with until you find the fish, then take out the fly rod.
Right.
You know, but if you're going to spend all your whole day casting, there's so much time in the air with a fly rod. Like triple tail fishing, you know, you go along, look for the fish. You see it, and you cast at it. So a fly rod's perfect. But with redfish and snook, you're going to spend the whole day in the air, and you're not going to catch any fish. But if you switch back and forth between the different tackle, you'll catch a lot of fish. One of the things I was curious about, peacock bass, what temperature do they die?
Oh, geez. Honestly, I'm not 100% sure.
Take a guess.
If I had to guess.
Take a guess. Yes, Robert.
60.
Pretty close. RJ?
65.
Right there between you guys, 62.
Wow.
62 degree water
it
temperature
only
will kill them.
62 degree water for them to start to die.
Wow.
That's why it's so hard to get bass to go here in Northport. We have ponds here in Northport that have peacock bass in them. They're here. 100% guaranteed. We've got Paku piranhas. We got Wapote. We got you know, tons of different freshwater species here. But every 10, 12 years, we get that major cold spell.
Right.
And it drops down into the low 30s, high 20s.
Right.
And that's why we don't keep them up here that much. That's why the snook are going to die up in Tampa and north every time we get that, you know, 32-degree, 28-degree weather. And it only happens every, you know, once a decade or so. And then the rest of it, right after it happens, they all start, you know, getting ready and start going again, and they got to move their way back up. By the time, like right now, I forget when the last freeze was, 10 years ago?
The last really hard freeze?
Yeah.
About 8 years ago, I believe it was.
That was when we had all the snook die in this
right.
area.
Right. 2011?
It had to be at least 2010 or 2009. It was,
okay.
It wasn't 11.
I'd go with that.
It was like maybe 9 or 10, but it wasn't 11.
Right. And that, and the water got cold and it stayed cold for a while.
Yeah.
And it completely decimated the snook population.
Well, let's say if it was 10, 9 years later, we've got amazing population of peacock
right.
bass in Northport. And it doesn't take that many years in Florida for the fish to move around.
No, they have a year-round growing cycle, except for on those weird winters.
Yeah, just every 10 or 12 years, you get this weird cold one. But I was surprised at 62.
Yeah.
I would have thought it would have been a little, you know, 50 anyway.
Yeah, I would have guessed like mid-50s would be more realistic.
More like
in
a
the
snook,
thought.
Like
yeah.
50 degrees, 47 degrees, you know, we understand that it doesn't take all the way to 32, but 62 degrees, that's a pretty wimpy fish.
Yeah.
You know, that...
But that makes sense from the game of fishes standpoint, is that it wasn't going to spread all over the entire state and potentially take over habitat, because they're actually the ones that introduced those fish. So they're not really, they are an invasive species.
Isn't it funny how it's only invasive if FWC doesn't do it?
Right.
If the governor's brother-in-law's sister's cousin did it, it's okay.
Right, exactly.
That's who we figure is running FWC now. It's the governor's brother-in-law's sister's cousin's barber's son,
yeah.
you know, needed a favor.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I was kind of surprised with all that.
That is, that's really surprising.
Let's see, offshore, big news, big fish.
Oh, it's been amazing out there. We've had, this past weekend was one of the few weekends in quite a while where it was very calm conditions. Temperatures were coming up daily, both water temperature and air temperature. I had a couple customers go out. One gentleman was having a very hard time finding any bait fish on the way out, but when they were anchored out there in like 75 feet of water, him and his buddy were bottom fishing, but had no live bait to free line out. And they always like, you know, anybody who goes out bottom fishing should always free line some kind of bait out the back of the boat, because you never know what kind of fish is going to come up and eat it. But he was seeing an occasional little cloud of what he would assume was bait fish suspended off the bottom. And they would drop down their sabiki rigs, and they would get one or two Spanish sardines or a cigar minnow. And they'd bring it up, and they'd hook it on and freeline it out, and it would get crushed by a king mackerel. More than half of their baits got eaten on the way up, where these sardines or whatever that they were hooking down there were getting eaten by other fish, which they're assuming were king mackerel.
While they were on the sabiki rod.
Yeah, while they were on the sabiki rod, because it just bite their sabiki clean off. So he ended up catching one fish. I want to say it was 49 or 50 inches that he caught. It was about a 50-pound fish. He was excited, and king mackerel are one of his most favorite fish to catch. But they ended up catching several, and all of them on just what few baits they managed to get up. And then another gentleman had the same scenario going on, except for he actually found bait on the way out. And he was fishing out there in 80 feet of water, so only a couple miles further. And he was just, every bait he free-lined out was king mackerel, Spanish mackerel, or barracuda. He didn't catch any giant king mackerel, but I think he said his biggest one was like 33 or 34 inches, something like that. But they both had the one thing in common. They let's see, one was Friday, I believe, and the other one was Saturday that they went out, because I talked to them on both on Tuesday. And 72 and 73 degree water temperature out there in that 75 to 80 feet of water, which is perfect king mackerel temperature.
68 to 72 is what king mackerel want.
And they were seeing Spanish mackerel free jumping and occasional king mackerel jumping. They only saw one, the one guy said he only saw one school of bonita the whole time out there. And the bait were not super abundant, but he did find them. But, you know, so, everyone that went out caught gag grouper, red grouper, you know, and the common number is like 70, you know, that 70 to 90 feet was that magic number.
So what you're doing is you're going to head out to about 75 feet of water, mm-hmm. find a reef, a structure, a wreck, something to provide actual fish for there.
Yeah.
Anchoring just in 75 feet of water, you're going to sit there all day.
Yeah.
You might be 5 miles from any structure. The reason that's important is that structure is going to have fish on it, and that's what's going to attract the king mackerel to it. You're not just randomly picking a spot. You're picking a spot you would catch grouper, snapper, something on, because there needs to be fish in that area in order to attract king mackerel to that area. So now you get out there, you anchor up, you start your bottom fishing, and then you put a sabiki on, a nice heavy sinker. You don't want a lightweight on that sabiki. This isn't like you're doing it in 10 feet of water. You're in 75 feet. Put a couple ounces on. Get it so it will drop to the bottom, 2-3 ounces of lead. Get it all the way down to the bottom. Start jigging up real slowly, about 8-inch jigs, 10-inch jigs. Bouncing up and down a little bit. And do that about 4 or 5 times. Take one turn on the reel. Do it again. Take another turn on the reel. You're literally bouncing that, jigging it. But you want it to come up like the slow pitch guys. They crank the handle. It drops the rod tip. And then the rod brings it back up, then you crank the handle, drops the rod tip, but you're jigging while it's on the way up. And that's kind of the critical part. You don't know if they're right by the bottom or 12 feet up, so you got to cover that whole area. But little tiny jigs, just keep them bouncing around a little bit, make them an easy target, but work them up. One crank of the reel at a time, jig 4, 5, 6 times, one crank of the reel, jig again. And if you get up, you know, where you're 15 feet off the bottom, 20 feet off the bottom, drop it back down. I'm just waiting for the music, my friend. You're in command and control. He was trying to give me control of the show. I almost had it for 3-4 seconds there.
Didn't last, did it?
Fishing Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, and Commander RJ in the control center. Catch you next week on This Week in Fishing, the actual show name. Wow.
Fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing. Just to eat.